This is the Days Are Update for March 26th, 2017. I'm Filippo D'Onofo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Logie.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And to say that this week was eventful would kind of be an understatement. We actually had choice of stories this week, which is remarkable for the time of year. So, yeah, we got a lot to talk about. Capcom has been in the news. Obviously, we're probably going to touch on JonTron a little bit, because, yeah.
Consequences.
We'll talk about that in a bit, but... Yeah, and some interesting arcade Easter egg news as well. So this one was fascinating to me, so I'll be covering this one. But yeah, we got a lot to get to. But before we do that, I think it's a good time to catch up on what we've been playing this week. And you and me, Pat, have both been playing Old Time Hockey. And
yeah,
the pre-release patch dropped, and that basically fixed everything that I had wrong with the game, basically.
Yeah, I've... In a lot of the games that I've been reviewing, it seems to have been a thing where it doesn't give me the best first impression, and then I'm about to savage it in a review, and then a patch comes along and saves the day, and I'm completely happy. So,
yeah, that was the case in this case too.
It's a good theme. I'm enjoying that theme.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
In this case, the patch came out before the game came out, so that's a good thing.
So, better, yeah.
Yeah, so there was that. But that's pretty much what I've been doing. How about you?
I wouldn't say that the game was bad as it was before, but I'm definitely certain it would have been an acquired taste if it had released in that state.
Yeah. Yeah, the way it kind of felt a little sluggish. And one of the changes that the patch actually made was eliminating that little bit of lag when you took possession of the puck.
Yeah.
And yeah, that helped immensely as far as playability went. So.
Yeah, that was absolutely necessary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You will still get your ass kicked in story mode.
It's true.
But at least you have more of a shot at it now.
It plays a more honest game of hockey, I think.
Yeah.
You were saying, the little bit I played of that, I had gotten the impression it was a little bit clunky, and now you're saying that was fixed. That probably makes it not clunky.
Yeah, basically.
Like, there's something I'm not getting here, or this game's not as good as I hoped, and like, okay, they fixed it before launch.
Yeah. It's like, when we were playing it, it's like, yeah, we definitely see there's something here. But when we do the review, we'd have to really say that, yes, there are some serious rough edges here. And it seems like they're, in fact, smoothing those out as quickly as they can. So.
Yeah, I also kind of wish they didn't force the advanced controls on you for the story mode.
Yeah, well, yeah. They kind of just bring them in slowly, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's still then, like, not saying up front, hey... This is going to kick your ass.
Yeah. That's kind of...
Like I said last week, they needed a towel. Complicated,
yeah.
And we're going to make it way too hard for you to even do any winning.
Yeah. It's like... Yeah, I was watching Pat stream this week, and he almost won a game. So that was good. Almost. So,
but that was on veteran, too, so...
Yeah. So there's... Would be nice to see... how you get on after this patch, so yeah.
I'll probably stream some right after the show, honestly.
Yeah, cool. So, I mean, what else?
I've been playing Zelda all morning. I need to change it up a bit.
Yeah.
And that takes me to what else I've been playing. A lot of Switch stuff. Still reacquainting myself with Bomberman, which also received a pretty substantial patch review. And that one I was happy to see. I also picked up Blaster Master Zero, but I haven't really had time to sink my teeth into it.
Yeah.
But it definitely fits in with all that is the Switch, and I can definitely see why Nintendo made a point to score it as an exclusive.
Yeah.
Because it is definitely one of the Switchiest games I've played.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the most Nintendo games that on the platform.
Yes, unapologetically so, and I would love to see more like it on there.
Yeah.
So, there's been that. And, of course, Street Fighter V, because we had another one of our gatherings out at Fusion Lounge. Yes, Poutine was involved again. That's just going to be a thing for me now. it was a good time. Just really looking forward to that Season 2.1 patch, because just reading those patch notes, that was what an apology looks like. And I think once this patch sets in and we get some more of the DLC characters released, I think this game is going to be in a really, really good place in time for Capcom Cup.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been playing.
Don't forget, Street Fighter V is free this week on Steam.
Really?
Yeah. They didn't mention that, did they?
Oh.
They're doing, it's exactly, we have the CFN 2.0 launch that, well, basically beta test that they're announcing.
Oh, they're test firing it. Cool.
Yep. So it looks like this week on Steam, you'll be able to download Street Fighter V for free and play all the things, including all with basically both season passes enabled.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So if you haven't played it yet, get on that shit.
Yes. Right. And if the price is right, so you'll just go in there and understand why I feel about this game the way I do.
Yep. So how about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, I finished Nier Automata yesterday.
Is that the pronunciation that we're going to go for finally? Automata.
Automata or Automata are both good.
Okay.
So either one can work. But yeah, I finished it yesterday. It has probably the best ending I've ever seen in a video game, at least in the last couple generations. I'm not going to spoil it because this is a Taro Yoko game. It would really lessen the effect if I destroyed it. Let's just say that it basically sort of wraps up the whole idea behind the game in a way that is just, you could only do it through a video game.
Hmm.
And I know I'm kind of sort of mimicking what Jim Sterling said in his review, but it's true. The video game is the medium is the only way the story could be told this effectively.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
So those of you out there listening haven't played it yet, go out and buy it. You do not have to have played the original Nier to enjoy it.
Okay.
The game,
I'm guessing it helps though.
It does in some small places. There are definite links between the two, but a lot of the really serious ones are ones you actively have to go out and look for. Specifically, a super secret final boss that is like at level 99 and takes a while to get to.
Hmm.
But it basically involves that infamous, terrifying moon mask that Taro Yoko loves to wear.
Yeah.
Who is actually a character from Nier, I forgot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so with that out of the way, I'm now basically head-on in Mass Effect Andromeda. And we're going to talk a bit more about Mass Effect Andromeda later on. But I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Did you like Mass Effect? Then go out, buy this game. It's good. It's really good. Does it lack some polish in some areas? Yeah, it does. The internet is also a dick.
I feel like no Mass Effect game. There's always janky shit in Mass Effect games. And for people to all of a sudden act like they're some like super AAA, completely polished work. I mean, fuck, you guys remember 1? Which is the way everything worked in 1? Like, this is the same kind of thing. Like, this is their first time messing with this system for a Mass Effect game. You know, I guarantee you, whatever, Andromeda 2, you know, Andromeda Harder will probably be inevitably more polished. But I think like, the internet mobs have been going after BioWare unfairly for
Well,
a very
here's
long
the thing
time.
You have to understand is that I think next to Blizzard, BioWare probably has the most toxic fan community on the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. I mean, their fan community is literally so toxic that they basically forced BioWare to change the ending to one of their games. Like, that's how bad it is.
Yeah.
And, you know...
Well, yeah, we can get into that, but...
Yeah, but here's the thing. Mass Effect Andromeda, it's a great game. And it's definitely got some areas that it needed more polish, but... It's nowhere, it's not even near a microcosm near as bad as the internet has made it out to be. It is, in fact, you know what? I'll just save it for later because we're going to talk about it a little later on in the cast. But so other than that, that's been my primary gaming on the side. I've been going through Chaos Head, which is a... famous visual novel. That's the
Steins Gate sequel, isn't it?
No, it's the Steins Gate. It's the first game in the science adventure series, which Steins Gate is part of. Steins Gate actually comes afterwards. There's also Chaos. The sequel to Chaos Head is actually Chaos Child. And then there's also Robotic Notes, which is another thing entirely. But basically, it's a visual novel where... you play a guy who's basically a straight-up otaku who lives in a... basically, he lives in a... what do you call those? Storage crate that's placed on top of a apartment building that his parents own. And he basically spends most of his time inside of it, on the internet and stuff, and... then all of a sudden he starts having these delusions where basically, and it has to do with like this weird sort of reality altering powers he starts to develop. And basically as the game sort of goes on, the story, you'll eventually come to these parts where you can have either a good delusion or a bad delusion. If you have a good delusion, it'll usually be something funny, maybe even a little on the H side.
Naturally.
It's Nitro Plus, so what do you expect?
Yeah.
If you hit the bad delusions, it's the other thing that Nitro Plus is also famous for, which is the gore and the nightmare fuel. But it's good stuff, so that's what I've been doing. What about you, Chris?
Well, I've been playing everything.
Yep.
Specifically the game.
Yep, the game.
I don't know. Sometimes it feels like actually everything.
Yeah.
This is the newest game from David O'Reilly, who made Mountain on PC and iOS, which was a game where you watched a mountain. That's kind of it.
Yeah.
And as a follow-up to that, very weird. You kind of take possession of objects in nature. I guess there's even some... sort of urban settings, like dog shit on sidewalks, and sort of try to possess them. You can sort of walk around, go find other objects or animals or whatever that have, you see these sort of bubbles appear above them, and they'll tell you what they're thinking. And then you go around, there's some other sort of objects or animals or whatever has these like audio logs, but they're Alan Watts excerpts from some of his speeches that are about all sorts of philosophy type thing about how we're doing stuff. It's kind of very relaxing at the same time. So it's a game that's pretty cool to just sit down and chill with. And just explore and just see what kind of weird things happen. You can sort of have like creatures sort of join up with you and then dance and then from there procreate, because that's how it goes. You can sort of bark or sing at other animals and things, and it's just all this sort of weird stuff that's kind of cultivates into like a really interesting and weird game that is a nice contrast to, you know, your Zelda and Horizon and Mass Effect and all that, where it's like it's games that are all about such spending like hundreds of hours of, you know, killing stuff and exploration and all that. And here's this game, it's kind of about nothing, but everything at the same time. Yeah, that's a pretty cool game. I'm looking forward to playing some more of it. And hopefully have a review sometime.
Okay.
Along with that, I've also been playing Mass Effect Andromeda, which, much like Brandon, I came into it hearing all this stupid shit people were saying. It's like, this is what people are complaining about? This is what people are saying is one of the worst games around? That BioWare is intentionally releasing this broken piece of shit to scam people? It's like, what? This game is perfectly functional. Oftentimes weird, but outside of like the weird animation stuff and all that, it's perfectly good.
Yeah. And I just wanted to point it out. I think that a good chunk of the video game, of the gaming media, has completely failed on this account, because a lot of their reviews seem to more reflect the controversy than the actual content of the game itself.
Yeah.
That's why you're basically seeing these wildly different review scores just all over the map.
Yeah.
And yeah, just it's probably one of the biggest failures of the gaming media I've seen in a long time. Like, probably up there with the shit that went down with Kane and Lynch.
Although nobody lost their job with this one.
No.
Yeah. Not yet, at least.
But they definitely should.
Yeah, I've been enjoying it, and one of the things that I really like about the game is sort of just how open the areas are. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of exploration to it, as well as just trying to figure out just finding cool things to do around there. But there's still some weird stuff, like with the new Mako, the Nomad.
Yeah.
There's like two different modes it drives in. There's like an all-terrain mode and a regular mode. I never know which one I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
The jumping's a little bit weird. It doesn't seem like it's a big enough jump like the Mako was. And also just trying to run over stuff is harder than it should be. I've been on that first, the first planet when it opens up, Eos, and trying to run over those weird poison scorpions, just way harder than it should be. But I do like a lot of the mechanics in that. I think it could be, there are definitely some aspects that need working. Like the animation looks like kind of GTA 4 in a way, like where they got that kind of physics-driven animation system in, but they didn't, maybe not had enough time to fine-tune it. So then you end up with weird things. But it's like I spent a lot of my time in GTA 5 just sprinting at civilians and jumping into them and knocking them over just to fuck around with that animation system. Like, that's not a negative for me that it looks a little bit weird. It just means we get less of the stiff animations that the series... I do like the story premise so far of, hey, we're in this new universe, no, galaxy at least, and we kind of don't know what's out there. And that's definitely quite a bit different from Mass Effect, where it's kind of all established while you, the player, are kind of learning about a bunch of things. But there's not really much here that's known. And I like going around looking at the different planets once you get that map opened up. Though I don't like the how long it, 'cause it kind of zooms in and like tilts the camera in the direction of the other thing, and it takes like 10 seconds the switch over. At least they're not scanning the way that Mass Effect 2 did.
Yeah.
That was a game that was a nightmare for completionists.
Mm-hmm.
This one, it's like there's maybe one thing on each planet, and it'll specifically point you in the right direction for that.
Yeah.
That's been good so far. That's going into my Zelda, Horizon, and Mass Effect trio of games I'm going to keep pushing little by little as I spin these plates. And speaking of Zelda, I've been playing more of that. I'm playing this like I played, and kind of still am playing Just Cause 2, which is I look at the map, I see where there might be things to do, and I just go there. And occasionally I get, there's something else over here. I'm going to go over there and kind of remember what I'm supposed to be doing and head back over the way I'm going. I managed to get a skeleton horse. And, of course, the stables are anti-skeletons, so they won't let me store the horse. That, and when the sun started coming up, it died.
Oh, that's a problem.
Yeah. So now I want to... I probably want a giant horse that is in that area. But I want his horses. Is and see what's all there. Because I guess if you have a horse you like and it dies, you can go to the horse god and pay him to resurrect the horse.
Hmm.
The horses are kind of useless in that game. Because you're kind of exploring and flying around too much, climbing too much for horses to be useful for very much. And that's sort of the one flaw of the whole horse system. I still need to find that stupid Karak guy that lets me upgrade my inventory. Because
I can help you with that.
I keep finding more of his little buddies, and they give me more seeds. I'm like, I need to spend this.
don't know where he is.
I know he's north of Kakariko Village, but there's a lot north of it. It's south?
Yeah.
I'll look it up, but I need to fucking spend these stupid seeds so I can get some more
slots.
Yeah.
So I can hold more stuff. Because I've been kind of taking to, for the most part, kind of having one of everything. So it's like I have certain scenarios and I have a thing for trying to have like a leaf so I can go on the rafts. Though I lost my leaf at some point, so now I got to find another one, but my inventory is full. So it's a stupid. It's like I'm not giving up a 26 attack sword for a leaf.
Yeah.
Still fucking around with enemies by throwing bombs down hills and watching them explode. Though I was in a weird scenario right around a tower where there's this lizard that was hanging out in the pool. Essentially, I was rolling bombs to him, and it would blow him out of there. And then, for whatever reason, it would just respawn a new guy, full health. And it's like, what the hell's going on? I'm 10 feet away from this guy, and it's just respawning him.
That's some bullshit. It's not supposed to do that unless it's a blood moon.
Yeah, it's like, somehow, like, exploding him caused him to disappear into space and time. It just brought a new guy out.
Just reset him?
Yeah. I don't know. I know there's supposed to be a way to sort of upgrade the runes, right? So I can get a more powerful explosion and all that.
Yeah.
That's something I also need to do, because it's not doing too great on
that side. It sounds like you're a ways away from that.
Yeah. Because that's supposed to be up in the tech guy's house, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been up there.
Oh, wait, no, it's at the first lab, I think.
First lab. I don't know where that's at.
The one... Hold on.
Is that not where I got the camera on that at?
Yeah, it's where you got the initial stuff.
Yeah, maybe I didn't talk to them, but I can warp back over there.
Really? Well, no, you have to go and meet Robbie first at the other lab, and then do some stuff, and then come back.
I don't think I know about any other labs.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I'm trying to take pictures of birds, and that's real annoying. Because you get like a split second to catch them. Because the annoying thing about the camera is that you have to have like the it sort of puts a little box around, sort of like a face mapping tech on like actual cameras now.
Hmm.
It's able to recognize there's a face. It's sort of like that, but imagine if it's with moving animals. The ones where, like, taking pictures of grasshoppers and stuff like that. It's like, it's this little thing. It's real hard to get it to recognize it. And it's just real annoying.
Hmm.
I kind of wish I could just, I don't know, do something, freeze time or whatever. And just do it all myself. But, yeah, that game's still going along. Splatoon 2, I was playing the global test fire. Finally managed to get on. The first time I tried to get on, it just would not let me in. Gave me errors that maybe suggested there might have been cap on it, but it didn't actually tell you in any of the errors. Hmm. Like, check your internet. It's like, no, my internet's just fine. I can connect to everything else.
Hmm.
But the eShop was also down at the same time that first test went. So they're doing like 1 hour tests. It was just really weird, but I got on later, and now I have a video of that up on the YouTube channel on the site. Same for everything. Everything is up on the YouTube channel and all that.
Hmm.
Also been playing Hitman on Xbox One, because I bought that there. And besides the Xbox One being stupid with downloads, I had the stuff downloading. I would need to use the internet for something else, so I'd pause them. Forget about resuming those downloads, come back the next day, and it would just refuse to start up the downloads again.
Yeah.
So I had to, like, hard reset the system. And then it takes forever just to load up the system.
Yep.
Like, somehow the OS just says, we'll get around to starting up eventually. Somehow these downloads causes major malfunctions.
Yeah, they're still working on that.
I complain about on Twitter, not actually wanting a solution. And somebody from Xbox Sports like, oh, did you get your problem solved? I was like,
no.
Not unless you're on the OS team. You can design a better OS that doesn't fall apart when I try to download stuff.
Hmm.
That's happened far too frequent. It's like, hey, I want you to download this. Just basically gives me the middle finger every time.
Hmm.
And the ordering even gets out of whack, too. Decide to download like the second or third thing on your list, not move it up to the top. So you don't know if it's the thing that's downloading or whatever's going on. It's just really weird.
Huh.
But Hitman's fun. I was starting up from the beginning, so I was doing the second training mission, and essentially trying to figure out a way to throw a bomb by these cops without them knowing it was me. Running away and hiding and setting off the bomb. So it kills them, and then everybody's on alert, and somehow finishing the mission from that point. No real reason for it, but just I've done this enough. I didn't need to just do it by the basic easy way.
Yeah,
I just wanted to see if I could do it this way, and eventually I figured it out.
Mm.
Eventually I got to the main guy's cabin, where they kept bringing the guy back to. So I was sitting by the door, opening up. There he is, boom, dead, hiding in the closet. And somehow managed to get out. I don't know how it works that way, but that happened. So yeah, all good stuff. Pretty much it. How about you, Lee?
Well, I've still been playing Legion. They're about to release a new patch for that on Tuesday, so that's going to be interesting. I've been playing Zelda. I'm not impressed with it. I've been trying not to lose my job due to rage. So that's an important game to play. But I'm actually kind of – I think the biggest game I'm playing right now is Should I Return the Switch?
Hmm.
Which we can get into here in a little bit. But I'm shocked at how, I guess, soft launchy this feels. Like, I've gotten in there, I've downloaded, like, Shovel Knight, which I've already played. I did download Blaster Master Zero, but, like, and the only reason I have this is because I traded in a bunch of games and took advantage of GameStop's, trade-in thing, where they give you, like, 50% extra on everything for a Switch. And I got rid of a bunch of things that I would just never play again. I'm not normally somebody that trades in anything, but I was like, okay, well, let me just do this because I could actually find one. And I mean, it just I don't think I've ever seen a project – or not a project, a product that was like Nintendo's essence distilled so well, because there's some like really cool stuff and then there's just some head-shakingly retarded stuff about this system. And like I said, I can get into that later in the show, but it's I definitely stick with what I said a while back. If you were paying, you know, cash for this thing, and you spent, you know, $300 for the system, you know, $40 for a memory card, $60 for Zelda, $70 for a pro controller, like what Nintendo's asking is ridiculous, especially considering there's like 7 games out, and I would argue 3 are worth playing. And then the next thing that's coming out is Mario Kart at the end of April, which is a rehash of what we already have on the Wii U. And it's actually fixing the battle mode that Nintendo should have fixed themselves. So it's just one of the system strikes me as something that probably should have come out this fall when they had a lot more under their belt, or maybe in the summer. Like, I'm looking at it right now. I mean, it feels nice and everything else, but I cannot imagine, like, if I had paid $300 for this and everything else, I'd be fucking livid. But that's a different story. So, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that in depth in a little bit, I suppose. Because, yeah, there's... I don't know. It really feels like it's not finished.
It's exactly what it is. It feels like a beta launch. And I just... And I think the other thing that bothers me too, and this is probably just more of a personal thing, but like I've been going back and forth with a couple of clowns on NeoGAF, who are just like, I don't know what it is. And I posted something like this on my Facebook the other day. I don't know what it is about Nintendo fans, but they are fucking delusional. Like the only thing that I can think of that's even remotely similar to a Nintendo fan is a Disney fan. But I've seen Disney fans call out Disney for being stupid. Like, I made this comment on NeoGAF and it got me banned for like 2 weeks. I was like, I honestly think some of you guys would let Reggie shit in your mouth if it got you a new console. And I stick by that because like Phil, the way you described it is the best way that I can think of. This thing feels very unfinished. Like, and like even the ergonomics of it aren't that comfortable, like when I'm holding it. But then what's funny about that is you take a look at, like, the Pro Controller. The Pro Controller is one of the most comfortable controllers I've ever used.
Yeah.
Like, I could play for hours on that thing. But
possibly
it's just
the best controller they've ever made.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. And you know what? And a big part of it is because it's just a controller.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's got the extra crap built into it. But it is at its core, it's a controller. It's not – I don't need to waggle the fucking thing around. You know, I don't need to point it at the ceiling or do this or do that. It is a great controller. It's got great buttons. It feels good. And it rests in your hands rather than you have to hold it.
It's remarkable what Nintendo can do when they get out of their own way.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's sort of like what the system, like, in and of itself, like just looking at it right now, that just unnerves me. Like, there's a couple of things about this thing I just don't get. Like, the power port on the bottom, I understand for because of the dock and the way that was designed and everything else like that. But not having an alternate connector or something, or even including like an L-shaped connector for the bottom, because if you're playing this in bed, you're really not going to charge it if you have a giant prong sticking out of the bottom. The screen being plastic, it just blows my mind. Where the kickstand feels flimsy as shit. And overall, I mean, I don't know, like, even something as simple as there not being any music with the menus. Like, there's a certain thing, I guess, maybe that I've come to expect from Nintendo for their UI, because the UI is snappy. It's completely functional. But I don't know. Like, I feel like especially if they launched with the few amount of games that they had, you know, having some virtual console titles there, like, you know, Mario World or some of the older Final Fantasy, anything would have been better, I think, for a lot of people. And I do think that they sort of designed this console for more of the hardcore gamer in mind, which is fantastic. But all of these hardcore gamers already have systems, right? Like, this is bound to be a secondary system for almost everyone. And so not having a bunch of options that will keep you with the system in your hand just strikes me as remarkably short-sighted, unless they just absolutely had to get something out because they, you know, they had shareholders and everybody else to be to worry about. Like, it's the first console I can think of that Nintendo's ever released, I think with the exception of the DS, that to me feels compromised. Because I'm already looking at it and thinking, okay, ergonomics-wise and everything else that they could bring out in the future with a revision, this thing would be awesome. Hmm. You know, better battery life, rearranging how some of this stuff works. The fact that this is something else just in a person who pissed me off. You know that little the controller holder or whatever the fuck it is that's included the in the box?
Yeah.
The grip. Why on earth that doesn't have a charging port on it is astonishing to me. When they're selling that exact same product with a charging port outside, like, there's just little things. It truly feels to me in a sort of way like Nintendo designed this with the thought that it may not be successful, and so if it wasn't, just like with the Wii U, they wanted to extract as much money as they possibly could from their user base. And I just find that incredibly cynical for a company that typically doesn't display that sort of cynicism towards itself. So anyway, that's what I've been playing. Switch Buyer's Remorse, Zelda. Like I said, not really enjoying that either. I think, and you know what's funny about that is, like, I'm happy that I can just go in the world and I can do whatever I want. That's fine. But, and maybe I just need to get further. I've only played it about 2 hours, but it feels incredibly unfocused. And I feel like a lot of the stuff that they have in this, like with weapons breaking and shit like that, I've gotten to this point, and this is just a personal thing for me. I've gotten to this point where inventory management is not a fun part of games for me, period.
No.
And the fact that I have to be in my inventory so much, the fact that even like in the UI of Zelda, I can't switch the page buttons with the triggers. Instead, I have to use the thumbstick. Like, little things like that are just grating to me. And so it does strike me as one of those things. Like, Zelda, everything that I've read, everybody's raving about it, all that other stuff. But, like, I'm starting to truly wonder, like, Zelda has always worked as Zelda, right? But now with them sort of putting themselves into the open world genre, I think there are a lot of people that just do it better. And I think probably their biggest competition right now is Horizon. And I think Horizon, as far as I can tell between playing the two, Horizon does most of what Zelda wants to do better than Zelda. And I never thought I would say something like that. Like, you know, Zelda's had pretenders or whatever you want to call them kind of come after him. And I think probably at least to me, my most favorite of them has been Darksiders. But Darksiders always kind of left something on the table. But like Horizon is a complete package. And so it's just kind of weird comparing those because normally Nintendo games are not really up for comparison. They're normally doing everything better than everybody else. But this is one of those things that strikes me as Nintendo being so insular and being so conservative, and the fact that we know a lot of their guys don't even play other games. It's, you know, we're at a stage in the games industry where you can look at what somebody else is doing, and if you can improve on that design or if you can incorporate it, I think a lot of people are happy with that. I mean, hell, that's Blizzard's entire MO. We're going to take a whole bunch of stuff that had jank and different things before, and we're going to find a different way to polish that up, and we're going to create something that a lot of people are going to enjoy. I mean, look at Overwatch. You know, I mean, that's kind of what they excel at. So I hope that with the launch of this system and everything else like that, I hope Nintendo is really taking a look at the feedback and things like that, and I hope maybe they will get out of their shell, because I took my wife out for her birthday yesterday, and I took her to see Beauty and the Beast, which I wasn't that interested in seeing, but it's my wife. It's what she wanted to see. Of course, I'm going to take her to it, right? And I remember sitting there after the movie, and it was good, but I remember sitting there thinking, like, man, the world would be a really different and probably less cool place if Disney wasn't around. Like, our favorite family vacation that we went on was to Disney World, and I have a similar sentiment about Nintendo. Like, I feel like games in general would be far worse off if Nintendo ceased to exist. But I just wonder if, like, to what Pat had mentioned before, is like Nintendo getting out of their way. Like, I truly wonder at some point if that's going to happen, because, like, right now this is a hot system, but I think it's partially a hot system because people can't find it. And I think a lot of people will probably feel the way that I do when they got a hold of it and go, okay, I got Zelda, and I have, like I said, like Blaster Master, and I have Shovel Knight, which I've already played. Like, and I know there's that racing game pad that you said was great.
Yep.
But like,
get
but
on
like
that you, for sure.
I will. But like, when you look at it and all of that, I don't know if it's just maybe my taste have changed as a consumer or whatever. But this idea of paying top dollar up front now to not have options of things to play is frustrating. Like, the fact that this didn't launch with some sort of virtual console, whether it was Super Nintendo or whatever, so I could download 10 games if I had something like that, even if it was just old shit, I would probably feel a lot different. But just like when I was sitting here playing Zelda and going, man, if I had paid cash for this thing, I would have paid like over $400 everything, you know, after totaling everything just to play Zelda. And when I play in dock mode, it runs like shit. Like, that would piss me off. It pisses me off, and I didn't really spend real money on this. So, anyway, it does feel very unfinished, and I hope they change that. I hope there's some adjustments made. Because especially the whole thing, like, I think the biggest thing is ergonomics. Like, holding it is not very comfortable to me. Maybe since my hands are much larger than other people's. But for a system whose, I think, a huge selling point is its portability, the fact that it's not comfortable, it's kind of a problem. Yeah. But anyway.
Hmm. All right. So, a little quick public service announcement out this week. Final Fantasy XIV 3.56, basically the last of the PS3 updates before Stormblood comes out. This is basically going to be wrapping up what we know as Heavensward. So, yeah, if you're playing Final Fantasy XIV and you're still doing it on the PS3, this is as far as you go.
You got till June.
Yep.
But, oh my god, what a ride Heavensward has been. honestly, it's been my favorite new Final Fantasy experience since probably at least 9. So, I mean, there is that. The trailers for it have been amazing. The in-game build for it has been incredible. Just the huge swaths of territory that are opening up in this. You're getting sort of your first glimpses of what might be legitimate Final Fantasy VI territory.
Hmm.
Just getting a real sense of how big this world they're building is. Because it really is a sort of composite world of all these past Final Fantasy games. Yeah. And they're doing it well. That would have been an easy thing to screw up, but they're being very careful. The past properties and past settings that they're tapping into.
Yeah, which is a tough trick to pull off, because in the past, it wasn't the common belief that each Final Fantasy game was its own world.
Well, it still kind of is. 13 plays with a few ideas. If you've ever seen the show Sliders, it's kind of that mentality. because it actually mentions all the other worlds specifically.
Yeah.
And what has become of some of them as well. For some foreshadowing. But,
yeah.
At the same time, it is in itself an amalgamate world where you've got the Garlean Empire, which are the main antagonists recurring throughout the storyline, and they're basically a hybrid of Garland from Final Fantasy I and the Empire from Final Fantasy VI. And they've just taken these two different influences and built them into a solid singular idea. And they've made that work, and once again, now we're going to Doma, and anyone who played Final Fantasy VI knows what happened there. And that's not even the only territory they're opening up in this game, so I can't wait for Stormblood. That's going to be it's just going to gulp me up, honestly.
Yeah. So, and apart from that, this week we've also got Old Time Hockey coming out on the PS4 and Steam. So, yay.
Yep, that's going to be fun.
And MLB The Show 17.
That one sneaks up on me every year.
And apparently there's a new RBI baseball that I've not heard anything about. I was like, well, the other game just stole your thunder with retro mode.
Yeah, basically.
RBI's been back for a few years now.
Yeah, and nobody's cared.
Yeah, I'm talking about this year's version.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, oh, we got updated rosters and the season mode.
Yay. But, yeah, old-time hockey. Probably, if you're looking for something that's a little bit different than NHL, this is probably one you're going to want to check out. What else we got? Oh, yeah, Rain World. Slug cats going to be prominent in this one.
Yep. So. I also saw there's a Fatal Fury Battle Archives Volume 2 for the PS2 is coming out on PS4.
That is the real bout series.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's also the one I'm missing.
Yep, it's that's a good get for anyone who wants to kind of see where they were headed with the Final Fantasy or
Fatal Fury.
Fatal Fury series before they went to Garo.
Yeah.
Because Garo was kind of a very sudden
left
change
turn
of direction. But yeah, it's definitely something different. They were really keeping the multiplanar sort of stages going. And I actually have the arcade version of Real Bout 2, which was the last one. But yeah, it's a very good choice, and I'm happy to see SNK really opening up the archives.
Yeah,
we also got Has-Been Heroes is out this week.
Yeah,
streaming that recently, I believe.
If you want to play a bad game, APB Reloaded is out on PS4 this week.
No thanks. We'll pass on that one. Yeah. So the
game's so bad it kind of killed our ability to get a new Crackdown.
Yeah, basically.
Wow.
I'm sure Crackdown 3 will eventually come out sometime. Maybe
it's
Microsoft will talk about it again. I don't know. Anyways, Patrick, you've been YouTubing this week.
Yes, I have. More Switch stuff. More or less, I guess I'm happier with my investment than Lee is. But
your main contention is that the Switch is not a revolutionary product, but that's okay because
it's
solid
thing.
Enough.
It's more than okay. That's a positive about it.
Yeah.
Because this is a system that's going to it's going to be palatable to third parties because you don't have to try to retool an entire game's design to get your games on the system.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing I think it's going for, and I should have mentioned as a positive, is that it is a game system. It's not – they do have the waggle and shit built into it, but that seems to be completely optional. Yeah, as opposed to this is what you have to do, which hopefully as long as developers can figure out a way to make this work for them and they can run the right engines on it, I think that's going to be wonderful. So that is an absolute plus. I think it's – besides like Nintendo's handheld system, which I would argue this is more so than a home console, but that's a different story.
The moment I clipped the controllers onto the side of the unit, I decided it was not going to be the 3DS successor.
Yeah, that's
this like a 3DS.
No, it's way too heavy. But I also think too, like I would not be surprised if they come out with like a Switch Lite or a Lite Switch. You can take that one, Nintendo. That'll be like a smaller screen, maybe they could build it with Nerf material, but like they could do cut it in half, make that the 3DS successor, and then still work with their unified software, and that whatever version of the Switch you have, at least it'll still work. So I think that's the route they're going to go. But Pat, to your point, I'm sorry to interrupt. The best thing about this is it does seem to be just a games machine as opposed to a remote control, and you can fling shit around with it. Like, thank God they finally just did something normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, the term I used was a glorious return to convention. the other thing that I really wanted to point out about the Switch is it stands for the same thing that a lot of Sony's recent initiatives have stood for, because Sony's handhelds have not just been handhelds in the traditional sense. They have basically been weapons to wield against the notion that there are certain types of games that have to be on handhelds and certain types of, and the difference is that Nintendo is attacking the same mentality, except they're doing it from the console side. Because the PSP and the PS Vita were really consoles that took handheld form. That was console gaming you were playing on those. And then doubled down on that by making the PlayStation TV and having that PSP version with the video out port. you know, they've been attacking that. They want, you know, they're unifying the formats and letting you choose what you want to play on what medium. And what Nintendo's doing here is they're doing the same thing, only they're attacking it from the console side, and hopefully that serves as a call to arms to Sony to get something out that'll perpetuate that line of thought. And that's what my next video is going to be about, by the way.
I think Sony's out the game.
I don't think so, but...
I think unless the Switch does absolute gangbusters, I think Sony's out the game because they're not... Sony seems more risk-averse now than I've seen them. Like, I don't think they have that same type of mentality that they used to of, like, we're going to bang this shit out and we're gonna wreck whoever's in front of us.
I don't think it's going to be anything new, really. I think it's going to be a portableized version of the PS4.
And that would be interesting, because I think the other part of the Switch that works, frankly, is that it, internally for Nintendo, and we've talked about this for the last, like, what, year and a half? Like, the Switch being the way that it is makes perfect sense for the way that Nintendo develops their games. And I think that that's sort of the most, like, important point here, that I'm not sure that Sony or anybody else would really chase, because for whatever reason, and you can even look at it with third parties and everything else like that, on the previous two examples of Sony's portable systems have been that everybody still has not, I felt like, and particularly with the Vita, at least Sony's first party, nobody really embraced what made the Vita cool on Sony's side. They just tried to shrink down PS4 games and PS3 games and put them on the Vita. But I think the difference between the way Sony develops and the way that Nintendo develops is Nintendo has never ever treated any of their systems as if they were second rate. And I can't say the same thing for Sony. And I think that's the biggest difference between the two, is that, you know, Nintendo's going to put out their products for this system, and whether it would have been previously, if it could have been like a 3DS game or something else like that, you're still going to get the same Nintendo quality. I feel like the majority of what Sony produced as far as first-party titles were compromised in some way. And I think that's going to be the biggest difference between the Switch and anything, and really any other portable that may come after it, is that I still feel like most companies, whether it's Sony or anybody else, what if Microsoft got in the game or whatever, you know, whoever it is, I think if they're supporting two systems, they're going to treat one system as if it's lesser. And that is the biggest thing that Nintendo has done with all of their portables, is they've never treated any of them like they were lesser.
I get the impression that Sony lets their developers decide what they want to do, as far as, do they want to make a Vita game, do they want to make a PS4, do they want to make a PSVR,
right,
do they want to make a Move game. Whereas Nintendo's like, okay, your next game's on 3DS, fucking make something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Your next game is on Wii U, fucking do it now.
Yeah, and I think that there's a different... And you know,
like,
what?
Every platform is king.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and so, you know, as much as I've sat and bagged on Nintendo for you know, the way that they do certain things, that is the one thing that they deserve an immense amount of credit for, because they've never ever treated any of their systems, like any portable systems, like they were a second class citizen. I mean, I've been playing my GBA recently, and I mean, going back and doing stuff on 3DS and DS. Like, I've been trying to finish Dragon Quest V as well, you know, and just everything about anything that you could play on their portable systems was never ever second rate, whether it was first party or third party. But I never felt that way with the PlayStation, with the Vita or with the PSP, because it always felt like they developed things separately. I mean, you can even look at, like, the Grand Theft Auto games that they ended up putting out. They were just – they didn't take advantage of the fact that the systems were portable. They just tried to tell a scaled-down portable version of a game, and it just felt compromised. It seems that way with almost everything that are on those systems.
And where
unless
did they end up back on
indies.
The PS2?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
those games still sold the best on all the PSP.
Yeah, but the
funny
part
of that audience
is,
wanted.
Right. But the funny part about that is like, you can even look at Sony's own attitude towards their portables. Like, I think, I don't even know if it's an attitude towards the portable as is as if it is just, we're going to put this on whatever has the most people. I mean, because you can, like, a perfect example, the best one that I can think of with Sony is Tearaway. Tearaway, I feel, on the console is terrible compared to what it's like on the Vita. Like, it's almost like it
misses the point. The lack of support was criminal.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's almost like it misses the point as to why it worked on the Vita in the first place. And you can look at, like, Gravity Rush coming over. Like, almost like Sony was like, these were compromised in the first place, and now we're going to put them on the system that they should have actually been on. And you'd never see Nintendo do that. Nintendo's not putting out, Fire Emblem Conquest on the fucking Switch. Maybe they will, but you're not going to see them put one out on the Switch and basically kind of act like what they did previously was dog shit, which seems to be Sony's MO, which just frustrates the shit out of me.
Hmm.
I don't know if I've ever gotten that impression, but...
Okay.
Oh, the one exception I would say about Nintendo is that they seem to be evacuating the Wii U for anything it can be salvaged of to the Switch.
Yeah,
and I don't know that that's a bad thing, though. Like, I mean, at this point, like, I don't even know that supporting the Wii U, like, is... So I'm of two minds of that. Like, with the Switch, I recognize that thing is going to probably be a port machine. And I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing. But it is also one of those things that makes me regret my Wii U purchase in a way that I've never regretted a Nintendo system purchase before. And particularly because we know Nintendo's not going to be in the mind frame of, well, let me give a discount to the current owners. I mean, they just don't work that way. Like, maybe, again, talking about buyer's remorse, maybe I'd feel different if... You know, like with Mario Kart coming out, if I could get it for $30 instead of $60, if I could prove that I own the Wii U version.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's that kind of stuff that just is so irritating to me and makes jumping into the pool even more difficult, because it's just like, I feel like, especially after Nintendo has come off of a time frame when they sold, like, how many Wii U's did they sell? Like 10 million? Like, roughly. the fact that system was there, like, they're pretty much worst system since the Virtual Boy. They should, frankly, they should be kissing customers like me. They should be kissing our ass and going, look, we're going to get you a discount because you supported us when nobody else was doing it. Mm. And I just, the fact that they, I don't even know if that's crossed their mind or that they're arrogant enough to think that that's okay, pisses me off. And to take it a step further, you know, I probably wouldn't feel this way if I could get Mario Kart in 3 or 4 months for $30. But nothing ever that they ever put out ever drops in price.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I think the only reason we even ended up with that Nintendo Select stuff on the Wii U was because they had to sell the shit somehow. You know? So.
Yeah. So, yeah, we could probably spend the entire show talking about the Switch, but, yeah, we're going to have to move on. But I do want to say, though, that I think it's way too early to really call the Switch a success or a failure at this point. Third parties seem to be on board, but early on in the Wii U's launch, that was also the case. So we'll see in 6 or 8 months and see how things have started to shake out. But, yeah, it's basically going to come down to this holiday season to see what people are releasing. This is going to be a big holiday for Nintendo with Mario Odyssey coming out, and I'm sure that's going to sell a lot of systems, no doubt about that. But whether there will be a good number of third-party games to go along with that, we're not going to see the next Call of Duty on Switch. That's not going to happen.
I think they've shut down the studios that would have made
really
it.
Wants the next Call of Duty.
No. But that's my thing. You're not going to see those big, huge AAA, you know, type games on the Switch. I don't think that's going to happen for that system.
No.
And I think that ship has basically sailed, except, you know, there's going to be some original stuff. I mean, Capcom basically had a hand in the Switch's design. They wanted more RAM and faster processor in there so that it could actually run the RE7 engine.
Yeah.
So, you know, they want to put some stuff on there, and it seems like there's a lot of developers that do want to support it, but how long that's going to go for, we'll wait and see.
And that's the other part of it that worries me the most is that if they're going to – I think you're absolutely right, Phil. I think, you know, what their holiday looks like is very important, but I think the other thing that's important is that what kind of longevity do they get out of this system? How long will developers support it? Like, I do think that the one big switch – that we're looking at now that was not present before is that you have a ton of indie developers out there now that are doing really interesting things, and they don't need very powerful hardware that's very powerful in order to do those interesting things. So I think that's going to be a boon, and I think that that's going to sort of be the linchpin for Nintendo on whether or not they are truly successful is how they court these extra developers that probably they haven't really ever given a look at. And I think that's going to be the deciding factor, because I think if you could couple really strong indie titles along with – because the overhead for them is not really – you don't need to run Unreal Engine 4 or anything else like that. So I think if they do that well, I think if they court those indie developers, I think they'll go a long way to being successful. They're never going to get to where they were before as far – in terms of numbers. I think Nintendo will always be a distant third, but I think as long as they produce a strong system and keep the longevity there in the way that they couldn't do with the Wii U, and frankly, I think with the Wii to a certain extent, I think they'll be okay. Yeah. But it just remains to be seen. I think you're absolutely right. I think the holiday is important, and I think it really, I'm hoping that Zelda is sort of an outlier, because the fact that it runs better on the Wii U is kind of frustrating.
Well, it runs better in handheld mode than in dock.
Yeah, which is completely unacceptable. And Nintendo's not the type that really does performance patches, I don't think. Not that I can.
There's
think
one
of.
On the way for Zelda, from what I hear.
Yeah, they're going to do that.
I believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
It's not going to matter if they produce it in 6 months.
Yeah, as part of the season pass.
Yeah, exactly. So you want 30 frames a second? Give us $20. Well, I got a big bag of dicks you can eat.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll move on to some JRPG news, because we've got a few stories here. Radiant Historia getting a Perfect Chronicles remake for the 3DS.
Uh-huh.
That would have looked real good on the Switch.
Yeah, it kind of would have.
This is Atlas. Hey, you got a new platform? Screw you, we're going to the old platform.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
They announced Persona 5 when the PS4 was getting announced. Like, it's on the PS3, and everyone's like, oh, what?
Yeah, which I think they just do that on purpose.
But it's still coming to PS3.
I think they announced it at PSX like after the launch.
Yeah, it's like, oh hey, yeah, it's coming out at PS4 too.
Well, I think too. You're looking at that though. That's part of that also has to do with the fact that there is such a huge PS4 install base in America. When you look at a lot of the things that developers are doing these days, like I read something the other day that the PS4 has only sold something like 4 million in Japan, which is like stunning. Because now you have that in a lot of ways forces the hands of a lot of developers, like even someone like Atlus, even a company like Atlus, who's like, yeah, we're gonna go ahead and support the biggest user base. Oh shit, what do we do if the biggest user base isn't even in Japan?
Well, oh crap!
Time to put something on the PS4, baby.
Yeah. So we got that coming to the PS3, but PS3 to 3DS. Jeez. And Strange Journey. Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah, I really like that game back on the DS. It's nice that they're kind of remaking it with this new... kind of the same as Radiant Historia. It's, hey, here's the old game. We're going to a little bit more.
Yeah.
And the best thing is you're going to be able to save anywhere. So it's great.
I think Radiant Historia is criminally underrated. So the fact that it's going to be released, I think, is just awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's been Atlus's strategy for most of this generation. Hey, you like this DS game? Here it is again.
Bam!
You could buy it again. We made it a bit better. So those two are happening. And on the Switch, meanwhile, Square Enix announced Seiken Densetsu Collection.
Yes.
This is actually pretty big news, please. Because it also includes Seiken Densetsu 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. No word on localization yet, but I'm telling you right now, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
I need them to not fuck this up.
Yeah.
Like, I would love, like, talking about reasons to play the Switch, I would love to just be able, because I have an RGB setup and everything for my Super Nintendo, but if I could just dock the Switch, grab 2 or 3 controllers and play just the original Secret Mana with my family, that would be amazing.
That seems to be the idea.
Yeah.
And being able to play 3, which I have a reproduction card of that has a fan translation of it, being able to play that as well would just be phenomenal. I really need them to do this. Like, I need it. I need very few things in life, but I need it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, this is happening, and it's coming over. So, apparently
well,
Square Enix...
I haven't said anything about localization yet, but it's not going to... They're not going to fail on this one.
Yeah.
Not with the current climate being what it is at Square Enix.
Yeah.
Well, not just that. It's just such a... Out of all of the things that they could have done, right, considering Square Enix's catalog, that's the first one.
Yeah.
That in and of itself, I think, is hilariously interesting. like, so that's what you went with? Like, oh, not complaining, but all right.
Yeah, well, I mean, you went with that, and what else? I mean, the Switch pretty much launched with I'm Setsuna. So it seems like, you know, Square Enix is, their commitment to bringing back JRPGs seems to actually be genuine. So,
mm-hmm. Yep,
even and quite if it's, literal.
Yeah.
We're going to bring all those old games back.
Yep. So,
I wonder what kind of retooling they have to do for those as far as, you know, because they were created for 4x3 TVs, which the Switch is most certainly not.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
Well, about that.
They're probably just black bar it, I'd imagine.
Yep.
Yep.
I mean, it seems to be.
Because I shouldn't expect it to put in work, right? I
mean, yeah. Well, you never know. Yeah. More than, if they localize, like in Densetsu 3, I wouldn't be surprised if they just pay the dude who did the translation.
Yeah, that was the other thing that I was thinking of. I was like, who's getting paid? Because I don't know that they're doing the translation. Maybe they'll buy the translation.
That's probably what they're going to end up doing because, hey, the translation was fine. So it's not,
which brings an even funnier point up. Like, I mean, we've had so many years of these companies doing cease and desists. They need to fucking hire these people.
Yeah.
They're doing your work for you.
Yeah. Like,
seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And you know they're dedicated because it takes these guys like 5 years to do a translation.
Yeah.
Because they're doing it in their spare time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, yeah. So good news there for Switch fans and JRPG
fans.
Hey,
the man.
Yeah. If you're looking for your Wii U version of Bloodstained, you ain't getting it.
Nope.
So, yeah, that came over the wire this week that the Wii U version has been canceled and a Switch version has been swapped in its place.
Who is really surprised by that?
Nobody.
They already pretty much said that's what they were looking at doing.
Yeah.
When they made that whole decisions have to be made comment.
Yeah.
Well, so. And I think it's, yeah, decisions have to be made, but I mean, historically for the last, 10 years, Castlevania has been on portables.
Yeah.
So it makes sense just to slap it on something like the Switch that can be portable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's a Vita version also. So, and the way they're handling it is, I think, the right way to go. It's like, okay, if you backed it for the Wii U version, well, you can switch out to whichever other version you want, or we'll get a refund. So.
Yeah, or if you do nothing, you get the Switch version.
Yeah. Or if you do nothing, you just get the Switch version.
And I think that's a fair assumption, too, because I think anybody that owned the Wii U is inevitably has already probably bought the Switch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you're already $300 in. Might as well put another $300 in for the next thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But unlike, you know, most of the Kickstarter projects that I've seen, this one seems to actually be progressing. So, yeah.
And quite nicely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, check out their page on SoundCloud. There's a lot of good music clips there, and holy crap, is it ever good.
Los Yamane, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's
that. I'm looking forward to that game when it comes out in 2022.
Well, it is Igarashi, so.
Which means I won't buy it until 2024.
Yeah.
But I'll get to it eventually.
Yeah.
No, I'll tell you this, though. Something else, not to swing back to the Switch, but the idea of being able to play any of this stuff portably is such a huge draw.
Right.
Because then, okay, so I can play it on my TV at home, and then if my wife wants to use the TV or something, or I just want to go upstairs, I'm not tethered, which is awesome. But then, like, then you come back to that plug problem. Like, there's just a lot of it's such a weird, cool, stupid fucking system.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah.
Yeah, somebody's already developed a third-party charger /
Yeah, I saw that.
HDMI pass through because, you know, apparently it wasn't proprietary, so it was like, okay, we can do this. So they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're charging, yeah. And they're not charging $90 either.
God.
So
we got, I want someone to hack the thing, and then we can get our own Seekended Setsu on there anyway, even if Square doesn't bring it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that'll happen. Mm. Yeah. Anyways, we got our new third DLC character announcement for KOF 14, and that's Vanessa, who looks...
Yep, occupying bananas. The silhouette space that I thought was going to be Blue Mary and a lot of other people at that.
Yeah. Yeah. And she seems like she'll fit right in. Yeah.
Yeah. So, almost did.
Yeah.
So that's what they want you to think, Phil.
And maybe, well, what else have we got? Oof. Rock Howard?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Looks like he was leaked shortly after the Vanessa trailer came out. And Oda's immediate reaction was quite telling. So.
Yeah. Well, it's like...
Obviously, have the Trump administration officials working for him with all those leaks.
Yeah. Well, at this point, they've got three characters, which basically, you know, fits them nicely together as a team. If they, so you know, I don't know.
And it looks like they're going to be occupying the four spots. They're going to be giving Antonov and Verse regular size boxes on the character slots, and then using the four.
The four boxes that
four other
that frees
boxes
up.
That frees up for the DLC characters.
Mm. Makes sense. So they might not even fit into their own teams. They're just kind of be there.
Mm. They're just edit team.
Yeah.
Which SNK has done all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, keep an eye out for that. And let's move on. We finally have to talk about JonTron and his run-in with... Well, okay, run-in. We've talked about that last week, but basically the consequences of that is Playtonic had him cameoing in Ukulele, and they decided to remove his contribution from
good
before his launch.
Good. I don't typically ever get offended by what idiots on YouTube say, but I am finding that in this age of like altered reality that it seems that we live in, that I'm paying a lot more attention to people that just say stupid shit without any thought or really any conscience, I think, to a certain extent about what it is that they're espousing. And, you know, I remember I jumped into a thread on NeoGAF and I was blown away by this because one, you know, there were people in there, the majority of the people that were basically like, fuck this guy. I mean, he basically said rich black people commit more crimes than rich white people, and therefore black people are predisposed to just robbing you. And then at one point, like, talking about eugenics and everything else like that, like, this guy strikes me as a person who has the type of opinion that has put us on the course that we're on now, where there's not cognizant thought given to the stupid shit that you're saying. And and I think further than that, I have to truly wonder, and this is something that I've thought about just having been involved in the fighting game community. I truly wonder if when these people get into these, having these personalities that they're known for, that they just end up sort of pushing the envelope because they're the people that watch them expect them to say things that will offend people. I mean, look, the way that we used to have shock jocks on the radio. I mean, you guys remember when Howard Stern and all the stuff that he did was just the absolute worst thing ever, but it got him ratings. Like, I have to wonder sometimes if people like JonTron and people like him are operating out of that same mentality. But I think Stern and people like him always said the stuff that they were saying for the most part for entertainment value and for shock value. I think the difference here is I think JonTron believes that shit. And so the fact that he does is disturbing in and of itself. And I read something, like I said, to bring it back to the NeoGAF thing, was there were people that were defending him that didn't even see what he said because they were so conditioned to the sort of discourse that we're having that, you know, a lot of times when we're looking at anything that well, I guess it's with everything these days, everything seems to be politicized. But there's this sort of mentality to attack people if they have different opinions than you. And I think particularly, not to bring it back to a political thing, but I think particularly this is a huge problem with the left, in that I think if someone expresses an opinion that you don't like, I think the left tends to label people like that as bigots or people that are intolerant or something else like that. And, you know, Brandon and I could have a very long conversation about this because we're both from the South. And because you do meet bigoted, stupid people out here, but you also meet a lot of people that have the opinions that they have because of the way that they were raised. Now, mm-hmm. what JonTron did is the complete opposite of that.
Yeah,
I think if
anything should be said to John, it's be John, have you looked in a friggin' mirror lately?
Right.
Because you are, in fact, the son of immigrants. I mean, your dad is from Iran.
Hmm.
Yeah, and like I remember seeing this Twitter conversation that he got in with people where he was basically like saying like I don't understand why essentially. Why a white nation can't work to keep itself white. We don't tell Japan that they shouldn't be considered Japanese and like just random shit like that. And
for the record, people do say that shit to Japan and they have every right to do so because Japan's has figured out, at least the younger generation has, is that the way their shit's going right now, they kind of need immigrants because otherwise their entire system is going to completely break down.
Right. Yeah. And there's a lot to unpack in this, but I think that the overall point of this is that I found a lot of people that were defending him not because they agreed with him, but because they simply wanted to be able to defend. And I feel like, and this might be a little bit of a stretch to you guys, but I wanted to bring it up because I think it's very applicable to the JonTron situation. Gaming in general, whether it's development, whether it's what we do, whether it's the games media, for the majority of the time that it has existed, has been a boys' club. And
well,
I feel like
I wouldn't. It became a boys' club right around the time that the Nintendo became a big thing. Because before then, it was a lot more diverse.
Yeah, but that's once, also we're talking about 30 plus years of it being.
Yeah, then you're absolutely right.
Right.
Yeah.
So at least if you're looking back in that generationally, gaming in every facet has been dominated by men. And I think that what we're seeing now, and I saw someone, I cannot think of who said this, but it struck me as the most clearly thought out thing that I had seen said about why we're having these conversations in gaming, why inclusion and everything else is happening, why everything feels more toxic than ever, yet it seems like we're trying to get more and more people into the pool. And I think that what it is that it ties back to gaming always being a boys club, and frankly people like JonTron and people that have the opinions that he does are threatened by that. And that is the core, that's the root of Gamersgate. Like when you look at Gamersgate as a whole, it's
which, by the way, John was also involved in.
Exactly.
He got into that whole Zoe
right.
Quinn bullshit pretty
right.
early on.
Yeah, he did. And all of that has its roots in men feeling like they are being emasculated for no reason. And it's almost like I don't know how many – I know Brandon, I know you guys, and in fact everybody on this podcast I'm sure has heard of Salman Rushdie. But I remember listening to him one day where he said – he was talking about religion, and he said it's always the it is always the hallmark of a bigot that is profiling someone or wanting to take the rights away from someone else that's saying their rights in fact are being taken away. And when you look at this sort of like white rage that seems to be happening that is expressed in very passive forms in the way that people like JonTron have expressed it, like this stuff has to be brought out into the light, and there has to be consequences.
Yeah.
I think for thinking this backwards. And
yeah, because I mean, we remember. I'm kind of taking us a little back. Remember after the inauguration, there's that famous piece of footage where a dude sucker punches Richard Spencer.
Yes,
who's a neo-Nazi.
Yeah,
and that is a completely appropriate response, as far as I am concerned, because he's a freaking neo-Nazi.
Yep,
mm-hmm. And there is. Okay, so do you guys know who Karl Popper is? Karl Popper was a philosopher.
The Blues Traveler guy?
Huh? No.
Blues Traveler.
Karl Popper. No, that's another dude.
This is John Popper.
That's John.
Sorry.
Karl
sorry,
Popper, he was a European philosopher who wrote a book back in the day called The Open Society and Its Enemies. And the one of the big things he says is he talks about the paradox of tolerance. And one of the paradoxes of tolerance is that in order to promote a tolerant society, you have to be militantly intolerant of those things that promote intolerance, specifically racialism and fascism. Whereas this sort of paradox where we believe in freedom of speech and we believe in, you know, tolerance of differing viewpoints, but in order to promote such a world, you actively have to be intolerant against viewpoints that are so odious that they actually harm that particular concept.
Yeah. I've long since accepted that.
Yeah. And the thing is, we were sort – I think a lot of us – and, I mean, we're all sort of around 30-plus years old now. We were all sort of raised in that sort of liberal hippy-dippy type of idea where it's all cool, man. We all got views that should be expressed, and that's mostly right. But it also came to a point that we believed in it so much that you couldn't criticize other people's beliefs when they're absolutely worth criticizing.
Yeah.
Specifically, the idea that the United States should be a whites-only nation and that we should peacefully, quote-unquote, ethnically cleanse it. Like Richard Spencer said.
Hmm.
Yeah, so, and I think the other problem with that too, it ties back to what you're saying is that this idea that everyone who has a viewpoint should be able to express it is fine because like I feel like that's a core tenet of being an American. However, I think the key difference here and one that has to be reiterated and applies to the JonTron situation is that
shit has consequences.
It, not only does shit have consequences, but yes, you can express what it is that you feel. But I also don't think that – I hate this veiled, I guess is the best way to describe it, this veiled attempt by him to hand wave off what he was saying. And we saw this happen with Colin Moriarty as well. Mm-hmm. I think you know there's so many political leanings to this as well, but I think a big part of this too, frankly, has to do with access. Like that thought process, Brandon, that you had mentioned that a bunch of us were raised with has sort of hit critical mass with social media in that it used to just be if you had a dumbass fucking opinion, you would say it around your friends, and if some of your friends were smart enough to tell you to shut the fuck up, you shut the fuck up, but you could have a conversation about why a viewpoint was wrong or something else like that. Now the mere act of expressing a viewpoint that's different gets you attacked. But then what happens is you express a viewpoint like what JonTron did, which is relatively abhorrent. Pointing that out doesn't lead to any self-reflection. Instead, it leads to that belief almost being galvanized and reinforced to where it's like, you guys just hate – y'all are just haters, you know, like that sort of thought process.
Yeah.
And it's disgusting because it's intellectually lazy, number one. But number two, I don't think anybody can grow when they're working like that. And number three, I think it allows the echo chamber that has been created. It creates things like Gamersgate and everything else like that where – the world is telling these people that they're stupid and they can retreat into a corner because, frankly, what they did say was stupid, but they can retreat into a corner and mass up and then go attack people. And that's the part that's scary as well, because when you have these YouTube stars that believe these things, you know, nobody's going to go to a town hall meeting and stand up and go, I like to call people the N-word, you know. But if they're around a group of people that they are comfortable with saying something like that, then they're going to do it. And I think the big cultural shift that we're seeing in America in general, and this applies to what we're talking about with games and everything else like that, is that what is happening in the world right now has emboldened people like JonTron who have these prejudices that they may not be outwardly aggressive in expressing. It has allowed them to feel like they are safe in expressing those things. And then when they are corrected, that the people correcting them are wrong. And I think that's the biggest shift that we're seeing now that didn't happen before. And so I expect, and we saw it with PewDiePie, and I would expect with a lot of these other YouTube celebrities that are out there, a lot of these guys are insulated. You know, they're the white male American who for whatever reason feels like they're being persecuted. And I think we're going to see a lot more of this stuff come up. And it's disappointing because, like, I've watched some of that guy's videos. I'm not a big YouTube watcher. That's not really what I'm into. But I'm especially concerned about this stuff now because my son and his friends are super into YouTube and these personalities and everything else like that. And it the idea that, you know, essentially my son or anybody else like that could really just see thinly disguised hate speech from their favorite YouTuber and start
especially
to think,
in Minecraft
that's okay.
videos.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, especially
oh, that's
with
okay.
Yeah, like, you guys have seen that article of the one guy, you know, his I don't know if it's a woman, but apparently one of her nephews is a Minecraft fan and watches a bunch of Minecraft videos. And then, you know, they're just talking about kid stuff, and then all of a sudden they start talking about Jews and how they love Hitler. And it's and he got it off of some of those Minecraft YouTubers.
Yeah.
Which is hard to find out.
Yeah.
Because they weren't necessarily saying it to their parents.
Nope.
They're just saying it amongst themselves, and their parents, when they look at the videos, it's like, oh, that's Minecraft, that's fine.
Yeah.
They don't sit there and listen to it and hear the terrible shit they're learning.
And for the record, you know who I really feel bad about this whole thing? Aaron Hansen.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he and JonTron haven't worked together in years, but because JonTron was one of the original personalities on Game Grumps, anything that he does is still going to reflect on Aaron Hansen, whether he likes it or not.
Hmm.
And you know he's just getting a shit ton of questions about this. And for the record, he's doing right now what he probably should do, which is he's basically just pretending it's not happening.
Hmm. Yeah, it's just kind of leaving it. But yeah, and I also kind of feel a little sorry for Playtonic at this point, because, that's... They're in one of those
exactly what you would think they would get over something like this.
Yeah, but the thing with Playtonic is they're damned if they do, damned if they don't.
Exactly.
You know,
and people are saying that they're taking away his First Amendment rights.
No, they are not.
That's being said by people who have no concept of the First Amendment.
Yeah.
Twitter says stupid people have no idea what freedom.
Well, and that's the other part of this, is that I feel like a lot of this is also simply tied into this mob mentality that exists with the internet that is just blows my mind.
Yeah,
I saw an article about how the developers are taking it and talking about they're losing dozens of sales, which brings up Arrested Development. There are dozens of us. Dozens.
Yeah.
I don't know how...
That sounds about right for how the impact they would actually get out of it versus the verbal and literal anger they're getting.
It's like, I'm sure that some people did pre-order Yooka-Laylee because JonTron was in it, but I can't imagine that amount of people is really, really high. You know, if they feel like they need to
get a
refund because, well,
they're taking them out with an update, so.
Yeah, but the update's coming before launch. There,
yeah, just don't update it.
Yeah,
play
just
offline.
Don't update it. Yeah.
If you're that invested in that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the end thing to take away from this, too, is that, you know, these guys are just people. They're not corporations. They don't have legal departments or anything else like that. I don't think any real thought is given to the consequences of their actions, and that they're, frankly, their words have meaning, that there are consequences for saying stupid shit.
Yeah.
So I think that's the biggest takeaway from here, and I think that's going to be an interesting challenge over the next few years in general, is seeing – you know, these breakout stars and you know, YouTube is, like, could you guys have ever imagined YouTube would have had something like this 10 years ago? Like, I don't think, I remember when YouTube got announced, a bunch of people were like, wait a minute, we can just stream videos, and nobody, and that was back when there were, like, limits. I think, like, a video could be 2 minutes, and that was it. Like, so there wasn't this thought, like, about, like, well, what kind of content will be produced for this thing, you know? And I think in a lot of ways, too, to make it topical, YouTube, I think, has done an immense amount of damage to a lot of websites and to reviewers and to games journalisms and all that, and journalism, because there are a lot of people out there that would much rather listen to their favorite YouTuber than just say, like, you know, some guy from IGN, you know, which is interesting. Like, to talk about Colin Moriarty, I remember watching he did an interview with Jason Schreier from Kotaku, where one of the things that they talked about is, yeah, we have opinions and things like that, but you know, we source where we get the stuff. We say if this was provided by a developer. You know, we try to be above board about everything, so you know if there is going to be any bias in what we're writing, you know, here's where it's coming from, and here's the full disclosure, whereas you don't see that with YouTubers at all. And that's, again, that's something else that's a concern for me, and I feel like a concern for anyone that is worried about the way that we parse information in the future is, you know, before YouTube and a lot of this stuff had come around with social media, it was relatively easy to figure out who was a paid shill. It is a lot more difficult now, and I can see that getting a lot crazier because, you know, these companies, in order for their products to look good, they get in bed with these YouTubers because it's a mutually beneficial relationship. Yeah. But it's not like having a relationship with another company. It's a relationship with a person. And that's a very different animal compared to, like, you know, I'm going to sign this contract and, you know, Play It Again Video Games is going to put out this opinion, as opposed to John Smith, who has, you know, 300,000 followers because he says whatever or screams on videos, you know, like,
yeah.
It's just a whole different relationship. So that, I think that's going to be very interesting to watch in the future, because I think disseminating that information is going to be immensely more difficult. Especially when it comes to, like, who's actually, like, full of shit, you know?
True. So I think we'll leave that there and move on. The author of the Witcher series, who kind of wishes he had asked for royalties.
Yeah,
well, he had that.
Would have been helpful.
Yeah.
He had that offer and said, "No, I'll take the money because this isn't going to make any money."
Yeah.
Boy, was he wrong.
Yeah.
Don't feel bad for him.
Yeah, that's
though.
His fault.
Yeah, I think CD Projekt's valuation is at about $1.6 billion.
Yeah.
So I think his opinion. I think his opinion just simply came from the fact that he didn't think anything good was going to come out of a video game. Like, oh, what can you do with my stuff? I'm so much superior because I'm an author. Like, you can see that in his interview.
Yeah,
I think he just didn't think there was going to be much money for his material turning into a video game.
Somehow becoming
this big gold mine.
Well, to be fair to that guy, that's probably not a bad way to look at it. I mean, that guy's property hit the jackpot with the fact that CD Projekt Red did it. You know, if it was like, remember Acclaim, and you remember, like, was it LJN?
Yeah.
You know, back when in the 80s, like, where you would have fucking, like, Wolverine shooting laser beams out of his claws and shit.
For some, like, reason, yeah.
For some, yeah, exactly. I remember people nicknamed LGN for "Let's Just Not." You know, so, like, I can imagine if he had that thought process that games were the same way that they were in the 80s, then, yeah, he probably didn't think there was that much there. And so, but, you know, it was CD Projekt Red. Like, that's the – imagine if Blizzard came to you or somebody like that, and they were like, we want to adapt something that you've written. You know, that's a whole different conversation than just, here's random group number two, and they want to make a video game, and they'll give you a bunch of money. Okay, I'll take the money.
Because, well, I mean, CD Projekt Red at the time was still a fairly new studio.
Yeah.
So they weren't really proven. So I can kind of see where he's coming from. He didn't really know what he was getting into. He didn't understand that he was licensing his property to a team that was immensely talented.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the record, though, don't feel bad about him because of the game's popularity, his book sales have gone through the roof. So
Now he's the guy that writes books based on the games.
Yeah, I bet you that pisses him off.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah,
like he said, it doesn't bother him. Like, when people put books in his hand and ask for autographs, because he's like, well, these guys are obviously fans. Like, they came out to. You know, they did this because they understand that I'm the person that wrote this and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, but I think that's a fair assessment, too. Like, when you – if you were looking at video games or something else like that where there will be novelizations of things, I think it's not an unsafe assumption to make. Like, oh, well, you wrote this after the games were created. I mean, look at Mass Effect. We're talking about Mass Effect at the beginning of this. Mass Effect has had a ton of novels, comics, and all this other stuff. Mm. And it – has its start as a video game, so
yeah. Who fucking makes a book on a game on a book that nobody's ever heard of?
Developer, like, from Poland, apparently. So
yeah, and whereas we're seeing the opposite of that now. Like, people are like, yo, how about we make a video game movie about Pong? That's a good idea.
And Tetris, because
Tetris
for some reason.
And it's gonna be a trilogy.
Yeah,
His quote here is, it happened, I can remember my reaction, I know many bad words, and I used all of them in many languages.
Yeah, at least he's honest.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, on selling his rights, he said, I was stupid enough to sell them rights to the whole bunch. They offered me a percentage of the profits. I said, no, there will be no profit at all. Give me all the money right now. The whole amount.
Yep,
it was stupid.
So they did.
I was stupid enough to leave everything in their hands because I didn't believe in their success. Who could foresee their success? I couldn't.
Yeah. Yep.
He doesn't hold any grudge against them. He said, the game is made very well, and they merit all of the beneficiaries they get from it. They merit it.
Yeah.
The game is very good. Well done. Well done.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, and he's doing pretty well. I mean, now we're getting those novels translated to English, which, you know, if the games hadn't been successful, we wouldn't have had. So, yeah. You know, I'm okay with that. And moving on, we got a fun story here. I think Ed Fries, yeah, that's actually how you pronounce it. It's spelled Fries, but it's Ed Fries.
Yep.
Works on Microsoft. I think he worked on the original Xbox.
One of the creators of the Xbox.
Yeah. Avid aficionado of restoring arcade games. Has probably discovered what is the first Easter egg in an arcade game.
At least as far as we know.
As far as we know at this point.
Yeah, at the end he says there's maybe 100 more games that released before this, but he has no idea the time to dedicate to trying to figure out if there are Easter eggs in it.
Yep. And this Easter egg is in Starship 1.
Yep, he got a tip off from the creator.
Yeah. Yeah, who remembered that he put it in, but didn't remember how to do it. But it basically amounts to, if you do this combination, you end up with 10 free credits when you drop one in. So
yeah,
that's a pretty handy one to know.
Earliest video game Easter egg overall, but
yeah.
He doesn't want to make that bold claim and maybe be wrong.
So yeah.
Man, it's just taking at least earliest arcade.
Yeah, that's a pretty fair bet at this point.
Yeah, he talks about going through magazine archives of trying to figure out when this released.
Yeah.
Going through the code, just looking for the specific Easter egg itself, trying out MAME, and then getting the actual card cabinet in.
Yeah.
And all the trouble putting it back together.
Yeah, he had to basically rebuild the
it's like the coin slot wasn't even working 100% right.
Yeah.
And like rebuild parts of it.
Yeah. And then it was a matter of, then he still couldn't get it to work and ended up having to look through the schematic while he was in bed that night and like, oh, yeah, if I need a, there's a bit here being flipped and I, and that could probably be why I'm not getting the output I need. And it turns out that's exactly why. So to sum it up, to get this Easter egg to work, you need to hold down the phaser and start button when you drop a coin in, and then as soon as the coin registers, you actually have to let go of those buttons and then hit the slow control. He was able to do it the first try, but it will only work on a machine that's configured specifically to not have bonus time enabled, because that's the. The
specific dip switches that
switch.
Were causing the issues.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can definitely see why nobody's found this up until now. It was pretty well hidden.
I even goes to Wikipedia just to try to figure out what an Easter egg technically is.
Yeah. Yeah, if you haven't checked out Ed Fries's blog, he's got a lot of good stuff there. Mm-hmm. He did a restoration of, he got a yellow Computer Space, which is one of the rare ones. I think the rarest ones are the whites, but I could be wrong there. Yeah, he did a lot of work to get that working, and then ended up helping John Jacobson get his working. So, yeah, he's a good guy.
That's what happens when you're retired.
Yeah, and you got lots of money. So, yep.
Lots of money and time.
Yep. In other news, In Exile's Brian Fargo is going to be retiring after the release of Wasteland 3 in 2019. And, hey, I think at this point, with Wasteland 2 doing so well and Wasteland 3 probably going to be just as successful, yeah, you can take a break.
Yep,
Yeah, they're also doing Torment that just came out recently, and The Bard's Tale 4.
Yeah. So he's still got some stuff to finish up before the end, before he calls it quits, but yeah, some good games coming out from them.
Yeah, he said he wants to go to Machu Picchu.
Yeah. Yeah, he should. It's pretty over there.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of Blizzard stories. I'll combine these. Big news. Yes. StarCraft Remastered.
Yep. Yes. It's about damn time.
Yeah, it's about damn time. Although, you know, you could kind of consider StarCraft II as a remaster, but not really. This is basically full-on original, redone in HD. You know, they did all 3D models and all that stuff, so.
Yeah, 4K support.
Yeah, it looks as good as you would expect it to. Mm-hmm. It's a Blizzard game. It's StarCraft. You could get your Zerg on all you want in high def.
I can't wait.
Supposedly they're going to be releasing the original versions of that and the expansion sometime after this update for free. Huh. They don't mention it here at all.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I've already got those on my Blizzard account somehow. Apparently bought them at one point. So
I'm excited about it. I mean, there is Blizzard in a lot of ways, obviously to a much smaller scale as far as like IP, but Blizzard in a lot of ways is reminds me of Nintendo in that if they're going to bring something back of theirs, they're not really going to fuck it up. Yeah. And, you know, StarCraft to me was just as important when I was younger as Street Fighter. The Street Fighter 2 and StarCraft are what stoked me into being competitive when it came to games in general. So, I like 2, but there will always be something just incredible about the first one in Brood War that was just like, it was almost like to me, this sounds so geeky, but almost in a way of a, kind of like discovering chess and being like, holy shit, there's a million different ways to play this depending on who I'm playing. Like that was the feeling that I got from Street Fighter. And that was the feeling that I got from StarCraft. And those are the two biggest games that I can think of that were like that. Yeah. So just the fact that they're redoing it, I just Reaver drops, bitch.
Yeah.
You know.
So now, you know, since Blizzard is in fact in the remaster mode, maybe you know they'll redo Diablo 2 because they dropped that little dungeon into D3 that was basically a remake of the original Diablo.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, maybe they'll go full tilt on that and do a proper remaster of Diablo 2, which I'd be totally happy with.
Yeah, and I think they should. I mean, because we're at the point like where all of that older stuff is just with current day hardware just doesn't play right.
Yeah, it's really hard to play those games.
Yeah, and so I think having, you know, for a company that has had such long tail sales with their games. Yeah. I don't even think Blizzard would even look at that as like a waste of money. I think they would look at it as a preservation issue. Even if they could, you know, obviously we know Diablo, if they redid it or redid Diablo 2, that would still just sell like crazy. But I also think that they don't feel threatened by their previous successes and have that determine their future. Yeah. So I think they treat each one of those games as if they are truly standalone. Like, okay, if you like to play with this, you know, you have this game, blah, blah, blah. So
yeah.
I would love a Diablo 2 remaster as well, just because being able to, like, as I didn't get a chance to mess with it that much, but the Diablo 1 stuff they put in Diablo 3, like, did you notice that stutter that they put in the character animation?
Deliberately, yes.
Deliberately? Yes. Like, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
And even the remake, just from the video that I saw of the StarCraft remake, it seems to have kind of that same look. Even though they cleaned it up, it doesn't look nearly as smooth as StarCraft 2, which is fine. Yeah. It's just that's such a neat little thing to put in there because I think most people would be like, well, let's clean it all the way up. And they're like, no, there's a certain cadence to this that's really important, and that's conveyed with the animation. So
yeah. And speaking of Diablo, their console version of Diablo 3 has finally gotten seasons. About goddamn time.
Yeah.
So now it's basically more or less on par with what the PC's got. Yay for me, because I'll be able to get in on the seasons now, because I like playing it on the console more. So
yeah. Yeah, I feel like it plays better with a controller.
It does.
Yeah.
At least I find. So, yeah, I'll be playing some of that tonight when I get off the show. Another cool story. Well, I don't know how cool it is. Depends on how much money you like spending. Fire Emblem Echoes is getting a $60 collector's edition.
For that price, yeah. It should be worth it.
Yeah, really? Art book, soundtrack, and 3 pins.
Yeah.
Plus a game.
Yeah.
No amiibo. Solid.
I feel like if you're going to be doing collector's editions now, you got to do more than an art book and a soundtrack. That's like rote.
Yeah.
You know, like if you want me to shell down some extra money, give me something I can't steal. As bad as that sounds. Like, I can go look up the pictures online. I can go download the soundtrack from 9 million different places. Like, give me something that is worth the additional money. I don't know that is. At least for me. Anyway.
Can't steal those up. Pins.
Yeah.
Watch me download them.
3D printers.
Yeah. You wouldn't download a bear.
Yeah, I might.
Depends on what kind of bear.
So another news, I guess sad news, GameStop is going to be closing 150 stores over the course of 2017.
And since most of their, you know, financial worries are mostly in the U.S., they're pretty much going to be focused there.
Yeah. This is a problem.
Yeah, there's too many GameStops.
I feel like the reason that they're mentioning, though, is not honest. I want to put that out
there. Yeah, they're blaming digital sales.
Yeah. And there's no way that's it. They have rendered themselves to a certain extent non-competitive with Amazon and with Best Buy, because if you're getting day one releases, if you have Amazon Prime or if you have Best Buy Gamers Club, you're getting 20% off.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's what's eating their bottom line.
Yeah.
That's totally what's eating their bottom line.
Plus there's just too many. Plus they expanded too many. Like, there are literally 3 GameStops in Macon alone that I can think of.
Yeah.
There should never be more than 2.
I think I have 6 of them within a 20-minute drive.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that they're the Starbucks of game stores. But at the same time, like, they have not evolved their business to keep up with what their competitors are doing, and that's hurting them immensely.
The ones they do close, I hope most of them are, like, the bigger ones. Because the bigger ones just kind of suck. You know, the customer service isn't really good. Like I said, there's 3 of them where I live, but I only ever go to 1. And it's the smaller one. And mostly because the smaller ones are just more, I don't know, maybe it's because they're more intimate or something. And plus I'm on first name basis with the guys who work over there, so that helps. But yeah.
Well, I think the other part of it, too, is just that, like, I haven't been in a GameStop that wasn't frustrating to be in a very long time. And GameStop, in a lot of ways, for lack of a better comparison, reminds me of walking into EA the store, where I know no matter what happens, I'm going to come out of it getting fucked. And that I don't like that feeling, you know? So... Whereas, like, you know, if I do, like, Gamers Club, even just the fact that they have to compete with people that will ship things for free and they won't is a huge problem, you know? Like, and I think that shows their – like, don't get me wrong. I know that margins on video games are razor thin. The reason why Amazon and Best Buy can do what they do is because they're making up that money elsewhere. But GameStop doesn't have that problem because they're making up that money elsewhere with used sales and with the fact that they bought ThinkGeek and everything else. Like, they have alternate revenue streams. But I just kind of feel like they're blaming their lack of competing with the reason why they're losing out. And instead of blaming it for their lack of competition, instead of blaming their lack of wanting to compete with Best Buy and everybody else like that, they're just going, oh, it's digital sales. Like,
yeah.
I would rather buy physical. I will always buy physical for the most part. Yes. If you give me a reason to. But, like, I know if I go into that store, I'm going to be asked 30 times to buy a fucking warranty and everything else like that and a bunch of shit I don't want to buy. Like, and then and I think you couple that down. Like, remember that whole Circle of Life series that Kotaku did that they tried to act like wasn't happening, you know? They're just, I don't know. There's a lot there to unpack with the way that they treat not just their employees.
It was almost North Korean how they handled that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just was just like, don't insult us. And then, of course, you know, it was bad enough. Like, and I've been in a situation like that. I'm sympathetic. I remember when I worked at AT&T, if somebody was coming in for an upgrade and they, you knew they weren't going to buy anything else, they weren't going to attach anything to it, you were like, fuck it, I don't need this sale, you know, because it would end up hurting you, whereas you would think that the company's overall goal is to sell things to people.
Yeah.
You know, but you were incentivized not to.
Yeah. So.
Anyway, I don't even like GameStop. Fuck that.
Yeah.
I mean, so, it would be a lot easier. It'd be a lot easier to do business with them if they treated their employees remotely like people. And I mean, and especially because GameStop feels like a company that is 100% middle management run, meaning that there's like some dickhead area manager who is just making everybody's life awful because they didn't get enough pre-orders. You know, but that guy wouldn't be able to fucking sell anything to anybody. He's like, do you want to play the Super Metroid Brothers? Are you into that? Like, come on down. We'll sell you. How much is this game? Right, yeah. So how come you fuckers haven't gotten any more pre-orders? Like, every manager I've ever dealt with GameStop is like that. Like, where they're corporate people that just happen to work for a game store. And it shows. And then, Jesus, just some of the rampant sexism that I've seen, too. Like, where they hire girls, and this isn't their fault. But like, we're like, nerds feel the need to come in there and be like, so do you really play games? Like, anyway, this is what a horrible company. Nobody's saying that to the stereo girl at Best Buy.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to.
That's fine. You're...
I don't like that company.
Yeah.
If you can tell.
Yeah, I got that impression. So, we got a few more stories here. We'll wrap up in shortly. Not a Dog developers and others have donated to Girls Make Games in honor of some shitty tweets that happened this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was kind of started by Naughty Dog artist Alex Neonakis, who was get some shitty tweets in response to, let me see what she was writing. She's doing, an asterisk, pulls you in close, whispers in your ear, and our intersectional feminist ideas are in here with us. Kisses you on the lips. And so the response that she got to that is like, this guy named Game Ninja Steve. And that's why you're cancer. You sexually assault psycho bitch.
And well, I mean, now that Game Ninja Steve has spoken on it, I mean, we can really,
And it's like gamer gay people on this. And so her response to that is, where's it at? I just donated to at Girls Make Games in honor of these lovely boys. Thanks, guys. And going along with that, various other developers, Neil Druckmann, a bunch of people have donated, just said, yeah, we're on this train of fuck the trolls. Let's donate more to the causes that are
directly opposed to.
Yeah.
Dude, the way that women get treated in every aspect of this industry is disgusting. I mean, it's flat out disgusting. And like I said, and it's worse when you bring in the social media. I mean, this whole thing started because some fucking shut-in dipshit wanted to say that to a woman because I guess it made him feel morally superior on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, that it's just – I'm so tired of that. And I think that especially – if we're looking at games as a medium in which creativity is championed, cutting off half of the population is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
You know, like, and not just that. I mean, like, I'm sure you guys have seen the statistics, like, depending on how you define gaming, like 56% of gamers are women, but then you'll have the hardcore gamer because she plays on her iPad. Like this need for gaming in general to stratify people is astonishing, especially, like, again, saying this as someone that came up with the Street Fighter scene. And when you play Street Fighter, nobody gives a shit what you are. You know how many LGBT people are in the Street Fighter community running around in dresses, dressed up as Pikachu, and nobody gives a shit? Like, nobody cares because the only thing that matters is whether or not you're good.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the BBC just recently did a story on Ricky Ortiz transitioning. And how she's treated in the community. And I've known Ricky Ortiz for years. Nobody gives a shit. You know, like, okay, is she good? Great. And you'll have those random trolls every once in a while that'll be like, okay, well, you know, I'm not going to get beat by that he-she or whatever the fuck. But then you'll have groups of people shouting them down.
Yeah.
You know, so the fact that, that so much of the gaming community seems to just be obsessed with treating women like shit is appalling. And so I'm so thankful that they did something like this, because that's put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the recent ESA survey suggests there's about 22% of game industry employees are women.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. By the way, speaking of people in the gaming world acting like assholes.
Yeah, we have to talk about the Mass Effect Andromeda animation issue. Where do we even start with this? I mean, we touched on it briefly over at the top of the show, but I think it's probably a good idea to go into what this former Mass Effect dev had to say.
Yeah, so he works at Naughty Dog now, and basically he released a stream of tweets over on his Twitter, and he basically described, he says, okay, so, first off, going after individual team members is not only despicable, but the corporates and choice of target revealed their true nature. No shit.
Yeah.
Just as we created a team, blah, 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 blah. That said, animating an RPG is a really, really big undertaking, completely different from a game like Uncharted, so comparisons are unfair. That was one of the things people were going on about, is comparing the facial animations from Mass Effect to the recent Uncharted, which isn't even on the same level. Every encounter in Uncharted is unique and highly controlled because we create highly authored, wide, linear stories with bespoke animations. Conversely, RPGs offer a magnitude more volume of content and, importantly, player story choice. It's simply a quantity versus quality trade-off. In Mass Effect 1, which is one of the games he worked on, we had over 8 hours of facial performance. At Horizon Zero Dawn, they had around 15. Player expectations have only grown. As such, designers, in parentheses, not animators, sequence pre-created animations together, like DJs with samples and tracks. And then he actually provides a
screenshot.
Of the cinematic conversion tool that was used in Dragon Age Inquisition. Then they used the one that they showed, the one they had in Witcher 3. Hmm. Because time denotes not every scene is equally possible, dialogues are separated into tiered quality levels based on importance and likelihood. The lowest quality scenes may not even be touched by hand. To cover this, an algorithm is used to generate a baseline quality sequence. Mass Effect 1 through 3 populated default body talking movements, lip sync, and head movement based on the dialogue text. The Witcher 3 added to this with randomly selected body gestures that could be regenerated to get better results. Andromeda seems to have lowered the quality of its base algorithm, resulting in the "My face is tired" meme featuring nothing but lip sync. This, presumably, was because they planned to hit every line by hand, but a 5-year dev cycle shows they underestimated this task. And all of this was exacerbated by us living in an era of share buttons and YouTube getting the lowest quality out to the widest audience. Were I to design a conversation system now, I'd push for a workflow based on fast and accessible face and body capture rather than algorithms. While it hasn't 100% proved this method, Horizon Zero Dawn's better scenes succeed due to a use of facial mocap. The one positive to come out of this is that the AAA story-heavy games can't skip on the animation quality with a systemic approach alone. The audience has grown much more concerning, which makes our job more difficult but furthers animation quality and animators as a requirement.
Yeah. So in other words, what he is effectively trying to tell all these people is, this shit is hard.
Yeah.
If you think you can do better.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, especially when you're making such a big game.
Yeah. And keep in mind, Mass Effect Andromeda, I've only been in the game a few hours. It's massive.
Yeah.
Like, it really doesn't...
RPGs in general are just really, compared to programming anything else, are just really unwieldy beasts.
Yeah. And by the way, they brought up The Witcher 3. The animation quality, facial animation quality for both Mass Effect Andromeda and Witcher 3 are about on the same level.
Yeah.
And yet
Witcher
nobody...
3 faces look pretty damn stiff. I just think they overlook it because they look so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But basically what it is I think it was somebody brought it up, and you know Phil brought this up during the Let's Weekend. The internet is basically a giant game of telephone, and what starts off as the game is good, but some of the animation stuffs are awkward, will eventually translate into something along the lines of SJW beta cucks ruin the animations with feminism, bitches must die. Something like that.
That's an incredibly succinct way of putting it.
Yeah, that's pretty much how that goes.
I'm actually really impressed by that, Brandon.
Yeah.
Billy, I just came up with that off the top of my head. But thank you.
Hmm.
But yes, it is weirdly appropriate, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, and like I said earlier, this problem also has – it's actually affected the way that a lot of the games journalists were reviewing the game.
Yeah.
Because I think
it's okay to have an expectation. Like if something looks bad, you definitely need to point it out. Like I'm sympathetic to what they're saying, but at the same time, like you can't just go, well, it looks like shit because it's hard.
Yeah.
Like if people expect a certain thing and you know, and let's be fair. I mean, some of those animations look really fucking shitty. And from
janky.
A,
yeah,
from,
I know.
From,
I'm not,
from a AAA,
I'm not
for a AAA game. That's not what you expect to see.
And I'm not disagreeing either. Like I said many times, I love the game, but it is definitely lacks polish in some crucial areas.
Yeah. And I think too, though, like I think I have to wonder if a lot of those people that attacked BioWare played Mass Effect 1, because Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 3 are massively different.
Yes.
Yeah, they are.
You know, and I feel like Mass Effect 1, even if you go back and play it today, is insanely janky. So, I mean, fuck. And let's talk about Mass Effect's animations for a second. You guys remember Dancing Shepard?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, it's not like this game has ever somebody looked at it and go, you know, these animations, there's something there. These Mass Effect anime. This is the bar, fellas, that we need to aim for. Is these Mass Effect animations?
Yeah. And BioWare knew that. That's why Dancing Shepard became sort of a running gag through the other two games.
Yeah.
So I mean, like their animation has never been that good, but to also have it be kind of this bad, they definitely deserve to be called out for. But I also think that I really think ever since Dragon Age 2, unfortunately, I think people have been just inversely negative towards BioWare.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of the notion that once you start putting a developer on a pedestal, any mistake they make, you lash out at them because they're not living up to your godlike ideals. That's what Naughty Dog sort of experienced with Uncharted 3, but they managed to dig themselves out of it with The Last of Us. And,
yeah. For the record, I want to point out, like I said, the game lacks polish in areas, and yeah, some of the animations are kind of pretty janky. And part of what makes that so striking is the current console generation we're in.
Right.
But then again, for the record, they've been working on this game for 5 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. To that point, I mean, it's hard. Yeah. I mean, we know that's fucking hard. If it was easy, everybody would do it. But at the same time, like, kind of got to hold yourself to some standards, BioWare.
And for the record, I do think that in coming patches, they'll probably work on it and whatever. The point I'm trying to make is, if you're
it didn't take that response. That response was not needed.
No, and basically, if you play a BioWare game for is you play it for the writing, for the characters, the storytelling, and the character development and all that stuff. And I can tell you 100%. If anybody who reads my reviews, trust me, I can tell you this. If that's what you play a BioWare game for, you're absolutely going to be rewarded with Mass Effect Andromeda. Mass Effect Andromeda has some very awesome characters that you're going to love.
Totally not what I thought you were going to say.
Well, yes, you can also fuck them too, but that's another thing entirely.
Yeah.
But yes.
You want to talk about awkward animation.
But see, even that, all games have that same shit. Even Witcher 3, which is infamous for its
extracurricular activities.
Yeah, it's got some pretty janky sex animations too. Let's face it, it's impossible to do that shit in a game effectively, at least right now. But for the record, yes, there are. You're going to love Mass Effect Andromeda. Mm. It's a great game.
Yeah.
Just know that some of the animations are unpolished.
Yeah.
Just if you get over that, you're going to love your experience.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I'll be honest, I wasn't even really... When it came out, it showed up at my house, and I was like, this is out? I'm so behind on everything, and, like, you know, I've even bought, like, some current stuff, which is, like, really surprising. I got Horizon and all that, but and Zelda. But... Oh my God! This is like the most packed March I've seen as far as like long games, like this God, like springtime window. Like, I think BioWare could have put it in the can for another 6 months and worked on those animations, and no one would have noticed that they were late because they've been stuck playing Zelda and Horizon and Persona 5 and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So,
but
it seems like really snuck up on us.
Yeah. Well, I think EA needed a big Q1 game, so. That had to be it. So.
Yeah, I think one of the big things with Mass Effect is just there's too many people having nostalgia for it.
Yeah,
they think way too highly of Mass Effect, the original.
Yeah,
because I remember playing that even after it came out. I was like, this game's janky. It's buggy. It's not great. it's sort of in the notion of what the hell were these reviewers doing, giving it perfect scores and shit. I go look back at the reviews, like maybe one or two of them mentioned the performance and all that. Then people are going nuts, like, how dare this game be janky and buggy and a little bit weird.
Well, that's like, what was my point at the beginning of the show. Like, I don't think people remember. I think nostalgia is definitely part of it. I don't think people remember how janky Mass Effect 1 was, and then 2, they took out a lot of your choices, and so that resulted in less jank. And, you know, and then 3, you know, this was a team that had been doing this, you know, for 6 years. So 3 came out, obviously, extremely well polished compared to what else came. So I also think it's probably also partially the learning curve with the PS4. Yeah, the system's been out for a while, and yeah, they did Dragon Age Inquisition. But, you know, this is the first game, I would assume, of a new trilogy. So, you know, when the next one's going to come out, you know, they're not going to have these same problems. Maybe something new will be there.
Yeah.
They're not going to have the same problems. And, like, I think that's the other part of it. Like, in a lot of ways, I think companies like Naughty Dog and everything else like that, sort of setting the bar in a lot of ways, have created false comparisons. And we saw that rear its head here. I mean, like they said, you know, Naughty Dog's stuff is extremely highly controlled.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I remember speaking of BioWare, like, I would make fun of this with my wife back when we played The Old Republic. The amount of ways that these guys would do animations, like when you'd see them cycle over and over on the same guy, like one guy would point his finger 3 times, another one would slice his hand through the air, like this same animation set for everyone. It was just like, yeah, that's not where the budget went.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, and you could see the same thing with Andromeda. Like, they were like, so we can, you know, put all this money into this story and these actors and everything else like that. Or how about them animations? And I'm sure there's somebody at fucking EA and BioWare that were like, animations don't sell games, you fuck. Put titties in there. Make them alien titties.
Yeah.
And then there are plenty of titties.
Yeah. See?
I can say that much.
See? So that guy probably just got paid in cocaine and hookers. So,
then the other guy got thrown out the window.
Exactly. So, you know, like OCP style.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's no, but I think that's probably one of those things they also probably thought they could skimp on, or someone at corporate did.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So, and finally, I think we can end on a positive note here on Capcom Fighters Network version 2.0. Will be launching soon, and it's going to be in beta in the next couple of weeks on Street Fighter V.
Or right now, hey. Over on PC, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you want to go through the changes? Because there are some pretty good ones here.
Yeah, there's a list. Just a moment. This is over on Capcom Unity. They've got the list up. And it is loading for me as I speak.
Yeah, their site's a little slow.
Yeah, a lot of it's quality of life improvements for Street Fighter V itself, which is kind of expected because... there is still a continuing rollout for that. So,
Well, while Pat's talking about that, we could probably tackle something lighter, like, I don't know, an exit strategy in the Middle East, maybe.
Okay.
Well, if we had the chance, I would like to talk a couple hours about Jesus.
No.
He died for your sins.
No, that's fine.
Okay. First up is the raid quit penalty system that they were talking about around the time of Capcom Cup.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They started implementing it. Now they're actually getting the what Smash players have been referring to as rage quitter hell, which is nice.
Yeah.
They're also starting to roll out basically if you're a rage quitter and do so consistently, you're going to get a brand on your username.
Yeah.
So that everyone just knows that about you from the beginning.
Hmm.
And then they're just going to be integrating that into the matchmaking logic, which was something that they said that was going to be a thing early on.
Yeah.
So
you'll only be matched up against other rage quitters.
Yeah.
That's... in a way, I can kind of see the logic behind that, but retrospective, it's kind of like, well, they... Basically, they're just destroying their own online experience.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
And so that's... it's still not quite the step that I would take, which is handing out straight-up disqualifications when somebody drops.
Hmm.
But for some reason, that since the dawn of Xbox Live, people have just been loath to do that. So, for whatever reason, that seems to be the step they're unwilling to take.
Yeah.
But they're doing everything but that.
Yeah. My only problem with a system like this is there's no way to get yourself out of it. Say you're young, you play the game, you get angry, you rage quit. Then maybe, a year or so later, 6 months, whatever later, you realize...
There's a cool down on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You realize you've thought things over and... That's not a great thing. You might be stuck.
I imagine there's going to be some kind of cool down on that.
Yeah,
yep.
Hopefully.
Whether it's in a matter of time or a matter of matches, overall aggregate, perhaps. But
yeah, maybe. Yeah. So what else we got?
Improved loading time for online matches.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That was necessary.
Yeah, because it did take quite a while.
Country flags for use in... Battle Lounge, so...
Yeah, that's minor, but a nice little deep touch.
Yeah. It lets you look for local competition if you're, if internet connection is an issue.
Yeah.
Training mode is going to lock save, or is going to save, settings.
Yeah, which I'm kind of surprised it didn't do already.
Yeah. making changes to matchmaking so you don't end up playing the same dude over and over and over again.
Yeah, that's happened to me.
Yeah.
Pretty sure it's happened to you, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, you saw one of those videos I put up a while back where, like, 6 times it was the same M. Bison player.
Yeah.
And I went 6-0, but...
Yeah, it's like...
Dude shouldn't have had to play me 6 times to move on to something else.
Yeah.
Let's see, where are we? Just generally speaking, more stat tracking. That's good for as we continue to take Street Fighter into the esports era.
Yeah.
Stat tracking is going to be good, so we'll see how detailed it's going to be. Forward to seeing that. Leaderboard filters by league or country.
Mm-hmm.
So just more ways to analyze there. Statisticians are going to have a field day, I think.
Yeah.
Friend management system. Now we're getting into the social platform side of CFN. Basically, it's going to expand favorite lists into a friends list, proper friends list.
Yeah.
And you can block people. So that's good.
That'd be nice. If you block somebody, you don't ever have to fight them again. That would be a good thing.
Oh, I can see the potential for abuse there, like just blacklist all players of certain characters they don't like playing against or things like that.
Yeah, well, that only hurts them.
Yeah.
Hmm. timeline.
Interactive timeline. Now we're getting into social platform stuff.
Yep.
Live feed of your friends' activities, replays. I like this. I like this a lot.
Yeah.
Basically, it looks like it's going to be Facebook for fighting games, where you have a timeline, and instead of just posts and stuff, it's going to be your friends' matches or stuff that it feels you might be personally interested in, whether it's based on specific players or matchups or what have you. That is cool.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. The in-game announcer is going to kind of be statistician-like in giving you random stats on both you and your opponent, using data populated on the server. That will be interesting.
Yeah. I'm not sure how that's going to work, but, well.
I have a few ideas about how it's going to work, and if it's what I think it is, then it's actually going to be pretty cool.
Yeah. These are some pretty decent changes so far, and I think what really needs to happen, basically, is this needs to go cross-game.
Yeah.
You know.
They need to introduce more games for that to happen with, which obviously Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite is coming.
Yeah.
That should be a pretty good dry run for cross-game support.
Yeah. Especially that timeline stuff, you know, if I'm happen to be looking at Street Fighter V and see my friends, you know, had a really good match in Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, and I can just watch the video of that right there. Yeah, that'd be nice. Hopefully that's the direction they're going, because if it's all insulated into one, you know, if each game is in its own silo, that's not very useful to anybody.
No. Nope. And it wouldn't really help unify the scene, which Capcom really wants to do.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, you can't unify a scene if you don't create it first. So, yeah that's something that they need to do.
Yeah, they're building it.
Yeah.
It's taking time. It's not like the mid-90s where it seemed like Capcom had a new fighting game coming out every 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I long to see those days return, but... You got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're putting the foundation in place. I think Street Fighter V is going to be in a very good place around the time Capcom Cup rolls around. And I think CFN is going to be in a really good place in time for Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, we actually managed to end on a positive note for once.
Yay.
Yes.
So that's a good thing. So, yeah, I think we got a show, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as always, you can subscribe to us on the socials. We are on the Facebook, facebook.com/DayZeroUpdate. You can find us there. Facebook.com/SmashPadSocial. What the hell happened there? I think I just went through puberty again. Anyways, we're also, if you want to get a hold of the podcast, we're on iTunes, we're on TuneIn, we're on the Google Play, or to your favorite RSS reader. So with that, for Crystallogy, I'm Philippe Udinolfo.
I'm Patrick Biff.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And we'll see you next week.